When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's the snap. There's the kick. It is up. It is no good. Norwood missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
I've got to run to keep from having. And I'm bound to keep on riding. I got one more silver dollar, but I'm not gonna let them catch me, no. Not gonna let them catch the Midnight Rider.
Chris,
yeah!
Sports Radio 101.9.
The intern did not get sing like that.
WFAN.
Yeah! 1202 on the Fan. Mick Monagle here with you for our Friday 5-hour midnight ride. You know what that means. Me and you for 5 hours until 5 a.m. in the warm-up show. We got Alex on the other side taking your phone calls. 888-808-1019. And congratulations, Met fans. I mean, the feeling around this team right now. You have the Midas touch. McNeil has the Midas touch. You've got your MVP candidate, Lindor, hitting the game-winning or, you know, go-ahead home runs. Magic in extra innings. You're watching, following, beating up on the New York Yankees. After years of watching the New York Yankees beat you. I heard Evan today, and I get it. Years of watching the New York Yankees beat you. Years of the Braves owning this division for the last six, for the last 30. Knowing the Braves ended the best season this team has had in forever a couple years ago at the end of the season, and watching as this four-game winning streak now continues through, depending on how you where you want to actually put the Yankees, but your two biggest rivals, let's just say that for argument's sake, and certainly your biggest in the Atlanta Braves, and two teams that have had their way with you for the most part. You absolutely dominate the New York Yankees in a four-game sweep over the course of the regular season, and obviously the last two games, including 2 days ago, when they absolutely embarrassed the Yankees. And you knew leading into it, coming off that emotional series, coming off an important win, dominating the New York Yankees, pulling away, embarrassing them, to follow it up with a much more important series when it comes to the reality of winning, when it comes to who they're going to be come October, what they're going to do come the trade deadline, and how important it is inside the standings chasing the Atlanta Braves in the wild card, coming out there and winning a game that, let's be honest, the Mets, I don't want to say don't typically win, but the feeling around this team is so far different than it's been earlier this year, all of last year, in their history with this group. Because let's be honest, in the 9th, 10th inning, the vibe and the feeling is, despite the fact that you have two hits on the game, despite the fact you've been shut down, the Mets are going to find a way to win. That's the feeling I get watching them. As a Yankee fan, that's the feeling I get watching them. They were going to win that game. One way or another, they were going to win that game. And yes, you know, Laureano overruns the ball. No doubt they got lucky. The Atlanta Braves handled really this whole game. Let's be totally honest. One, we understand they're a different team right now. They're banged up. They don't have Acuna. They won't have Acuna. Albies might be back towards the end of the year, but they're struggling. They have been all year to score runs. Ozuna is really their only good player. You've got Olsen having the worst season of his career. They're really struggling to score runs, and they're pressing, much like the Yankees. I mean, as they dominate the Yankees and now the Braves, you could paint the similarities between those two teams, quite honestly, the two wild card leaders in the American League and National League, as they're in free fall and unable to score runs and pressing, and you see Whit Merrifield trying to steal third base in the 9th and getting thrown out by Alvarez, who made a terrific throw on it, or whether it's completely bungling the top of the 10th inning where they lay down a bunt, which I hate playing for one run, especially against this hot Met team and their inability to score. I'm not playing for one run in the 9th. They run a suicide squeeze in the just an embarrassing display from the Atlanta Braves, and that's not to diminish what the Mets have done here. But even on nights where the offense is held down, even on nights where it might not feel at times it's going to go your way, you come home after a big win in the Bronx and you feel like, oh, geez, here we go. Back to playing the Braves. Can't get a hit. And still, your MVP comes through. McNeil, who's completely been different now, comes through. And for me, the biggest part of this game, the biggest piece of this game, and something that probably, we know what McNeil can be, it's a hot streak. I have to see more, but right now he's playing out of his mind. I hope it continues. He does have a track record, won a batting title. It's not that it can't continue. It's just been so bad for a year and a half that I need more than a week. But right now he's been great. Lindor absolutely 100% believe can be the rest of this. His numbers since he's gotten to the leadoff spot are out of control. Two home runs last night, two home runs against the Yankees on Wednesday night, a two-run home run in this game. But the moment in this game where the game is won for me is the sixth inning. And what Buto now brings to this bullpen and in this game, the ability to come in, Severino gives up the game-tying hit. He comes out in the sixth, not giving up a run. Buto comes into this situation, first and second, nobody out, tie game, gets out of the jam and proceeds to pitch another two innings. The weapon that Buto has become in this bullpen, which by far, while we're going through this winning streak, while the Mets are playing this great baseball, their biggest weakness by far still is the bullpen. You know, Diaz has had his moments. We all know the beginning, then the terrible stretch, then getting caught with the sticky stuff since he's come back. You know, he's been pretty good. And you need him to be at least close to the closer he was 2 years ago. But ultimately, even though they were able to shut down the New York Yankees in that hideous lineup, for the most part, you're still pretty nervous about guys like Diekman. You're still pretty nervous about guys like Ottavino. You're still pretty nervous about this bullpen. And to have a guy like Buto, who can come in and not only pitch you out of jams, but can give you two, three innings, give you that length, you know, like Michael King did for the New York Yankees before they had to trade him for Juan Soto. I mean, that is an enormous weapon. It's someone who might not be able to pitch every day, but it's someone who comes in and can stabilize an important game, who can come in and not, you know, because some of these guys, they come in, they need the clean inning. You need the clean inning. Okay, maybe they can give you three innings like a long man, but to have the added element of being able to come in, pitch out of a jam, and then give you another two innings to get you to the ninth in Diaz is a huge weapon. And he's throwing more strikes than he did as a starter. His changeup is playing better in the bullpen than it is. His stuff is playing better in the bullpen than it did in the rotation. And yes, you know, they have starting issues. They've lost Scott here. You cannot move Buto out of this spot. He is a game changer in the bullpen, and that's where this game was won. Him coming in and then shutting down the Braves the rest of the way. And now as you look and they take care of the Yankees and they take care of the Braves, they're on a four-game winning streak. They're playing as well as anyone in Major League Baseball. That lineup, despite not coming through tonight, finds a way. And they've been so good. You look at them, they are a game in the loss column behind the Atlanta Braves for the first wild card. This is a completely new season. Forget everything else. Forget everything else. And I know Met fans, I heard them calling into Keith. I've listened to Met fans. I know Met fans. I live with Met fans. I love, you know, I have best friends who are Met fans. I get it. There's hesitation. And here's the one point I'll say about it. I don't believe that this lineup and this team will be this hot or this good. Nobody ever is for forever. But what we're seeing is not a mirage. What we're seeing is not fake. What we're seeing is some guys having the best years of their career at the bottom of the lineup, right? Whether it be Iglesias, whether it be Vientos, who everybody wanted to send down to the minor leagues and was thrilled to do so when J.D. Martinez was signed. Bader, who's still banged up a little bit, but he's having a career year. Taylor's having a career year. I mean, you're seeing just special signs. You have the song, OMG. You have everything, a grimace, everything else along with this team. You're watching this team overachieve and play great. And you know what? It's no longer overachieving. It's who they are. And that's why, for me, if this is a no longer, they have gone through stages throughout this winning streak on how the Mets should be viewed by the fans and by their front office, more importantly. And there were stages of it, right? And early on, it was, okay, what do we do about Pete Alonso? Should we, how do we trade him? Should we trade him? What other pieces can we move? We got Severino's pitching well, who can move. We've got, obviously, JD Martinez, they can move. As the season was floundering and falling apart, that was the conversation. As they started to play better, you started to think differently. And then once they got in it a little bit, okay, well, now maybe we shouldn't sell. Maybe we should buy. Maybe we should buy. On what level, though? I mean, how much do you trust this team? And then now, slowly but surely, and now you're getting to a point, and I think you're there. When you take everything into account, when you take the way they've played, when you take the little special things of role players having career seasons, when you take into the account of every single move made in the offseason, whether it be J.D. Martinez, who sparked this whole damn thing with the walk-off hit against Miami, or whether it be Lindor, your MVP, playing like one, your high-priced $30 million player, playing like one. Whether it be your catcher, the new young kid, still, upstart rookie sensation of last year, the new face of the franchise possibly moving forward, impacting winning on such a level. You watch how mature he is behind the plate, even though he's cooled off offensively, makes great throws to throw runners out in the ninth inning at third base in a league where it feels like nobody gets thrown out. All the different things you're seeing, the way they've turned around their season, the way now Buddha has helped the bullpen. And, that little move, we'll put Buddha in the bullpen. We have some extra depth in the rotation. And now he becomes a Michael King type, get out of jams, and then pitch another three innings. I'm sorry. I think forget the idea of selling, done. Forget the idea of buying. We know that's going to happen. Now the question is, what level of buying are you willing to do? And how serious does Stearns take this trade deadline in a couple days? Because they are a game out, a half a game, one in the loss column, from being the wild card leader. As the Braves fall apart and can't score runs, and watching this team without Acuna, without Albies, pressing, trying suicide squeezes in the 10th inning. Watching every guy come up having the worst year of his career while the Mets are having their best. Like, it's just one of those things where, at this point, how serious do you take it? Are you willing to add pieces that don't include or won't be included in your long-term vision? Are you willing to add pieces that could be rentals? Are you willing to go and improve that bullpen by moves like Amato? Yeah, okay, Sure, that makes sense, right? A little piece. He's had better years than this year. You're willing to get him for kind of nothing. Oh, you can get another arm. Hey, it's better than what they have, right? It's better than the slop they've been throwing out there, as long as it improves. Or do you veer far away from the initial thought process of this season of attempting to win while ultimately plan A, rebuilding for the future? At what point do you say the future is now? Because I will tell you, and I think Met fans should understand this. Hear me loud and hear me good. Special seasons don't come around that often. And you can build for the future, and obviously in some way, shape, and form, they need to. We've seen this organization be at the bottom of the barrel of players they drafted and developed, making it to the major leagues. Worst in baseball. They've had a real problem with it. They've struggled with it. They brought in Stearns specifically to help it. Last year's trade deadline was impacting it. The owner went out there and threw and traded away excellent Hall of Fame caliber starting pitching players and added money to their deals to get back the best prospects possible to stack this thing. I get it. You want long-term success. You want sustained winning. We all do. But when you're watching this as Kodai Senga, their ace, is now going to return tonight against the Braves, as you watch them flounder and the Mets in a secure playoff spot looking like the best of everybody this side of the Philadelphia Phillies and the Los Angeles Dodgers, at what point do you say, I have to put more importance into winning now than I do anything else? That wasn't the mission statement heading in, but at what point do you play yourself into it? At what point do you say, because honestly, it's great now, and I think that's what maybe some Met fans will say who want to hold on to the future, who believe in this belief. It'll be, well, hey, look at how well they're playing now. How much can I help this team? I mean, They're doing great. We'll add little pieces. If they continue to play like this, they can win anyway. And I would say, yeah, I mean, that sounds great, other than things change. And I don't know if this offense is going to be this potent, this deadly for the entire season. You don't know how Budo will pitch the rest. I mean, there is enough where you feel like they are a solid baseball team that is as good as anyone, you know, this side of Philadelphia in the National League, and you have to go out there and try and bolster it and try and win this year. That's the question I have, and that's the question I would love Stearns to answer, and I'm wondering how he's feeling. As we're listening to the trade deadline talks, and all the names are coming up, and all the different relievers are coming up, and all the different pieces, starting pitching, I mean, at what level would you be interested in adding a Skubal or one of these top Kubla and adding one of these top starting pitching guys at the top of the market, a Crochet, a Skubal, one of these guys that could bring you an ace to this staff come playoff series, come a three-game set in a wild card series or an NLCS, and now you're throwing Severino, Kodai Senga, and another top-level starting pitcher, and you can move guys in your rotation now to the bullpen to help as well as add bullpen pieces. Like, at what level are you willing to do that? Because I'd tell you, right now, I just heard Keith at the end of his show. I'm not saying the Mets are the best team in baseball. I'm not saying they're unstoppable. But when guys are overrunning fly balls, when teams are running into outs in the ninth and extra innings, when you're pounding what has been the teams that have pounded you for years, when you have a group that is so tight-knit, when you have your MVP player playing like an MVP, when you have your subs and your secondary pieces playing the best they've played in their career, when you have guys like Iglesias coming up and taking over the second baseman job with an OPS of 1,000, when those special things start to happen, you don't run from it, you embrace it. And whatever the plan may have been before, things change. And sure, you know, nice little pieces that could slightly help the bullpen is without question on the table. But what else? Are they looking just for the scraps that are better than their scraps? Or are they looking to steal other people's dinner? Because if I'm the Mets right now, and I see what's going on, and I feel the vibe around this team, I'm looking for dinner. I'm looking for everything. Why not? Why not? You have no idea what prospects will bring. You have no idea how they'll perform when they get here. You have no idea what free agent signings are possible or that will help this team next year. They won 101 games 2 years ago, and last year was a fall-on-your-face disaster. They were led by Buck Showalter, won 101 games. They didn't lose a series for the first 2 months of the year. They were on their way. It's the best regular season in 100 years for the Mets. And then they completely fell apart at the end of the year. And then the year after that was a disaster where they were giving up at the trade deadline. Anything can happen next year. What I'm watching now feels special. What I'm watching now, and that's not to say, you know, did they get lucky last night? Absolutely they got lucky. Did Liriano overrun the ball? Absolutely. Did the Braves run themselves out of two innings? Yes. But luck is the residue of design. And good teams get lucky. Good teams make their own luck. And when luck and good come together, that's when you get great. And when I have a chance to chase great and it's within my grasp, I take it. I don't know how far Stearns will go. I don't know who's available. I don't know on what level any of this makes sense. All I know is I believe in this team. They're showing me all kinds of signs, and I'm watching the other teams fade away. I'm watching the Atlanta Braves come back to me as I chase them. I want to go win. I want to win now. This wasn't possible at the start of the year. This wasn't what we thought. Nobody would have expected them to be a game in the loss column behind the Atlanta Braves. Heading into the year, you thought, hey, if everything went right, 500. Now they look like a team that's dangerous. Things change. And I can't sit idly by and just go, hey, listen, they're playing so well that, hey, it might happen anyway, which is true, but I got to go out and help this team. And if it cost me prospects I didn't even think were possible trading before the season started, then that's what it costs. You've got the richest owner in baseball. And yes, you want to, you know, build for the future. That doesn't have to stop. I've just seen too many good signs. I've seen when balls land in the outfield, when teams run themselves out of innings, when you're beating up on teams that have historically beat up on you, when you're on this historical run, when your best players are your best players and your bench players are better than everybody else's bench, and you're getting, you know, hitting home runs off last year's AL Cy Young Award winner from the nine hitter. I mean, those are the kind of things I embrace. And that's what the Mets are showing you on a nightly basis. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. So many things from this game last night that just, one, following up that the Yankee victory with now continuing beating the Braves. You got Senga coming back tonight. A Met team that is still winning games without scoring runs. A bullpen piece in Budo who can get you out of jams and then give you two more innings. Your closer who can make it through in the ninth. The right fielder overrunning the ball, McNeil on fire. These are things that are starting to tell a story. And I want to add to it. Because it could be a special one.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Five back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right. And the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
So I'm just seeing the Snitker in the post game. I had to run, you know, for those of you who don't know, I live about an hour and a half away, even with no traffic. So I had to run out as soon as the game ended, and then I pretty much just got here. And Snitker says that he didn't call. I mean, he bunted in they handled that inning just awful. The Atlanta Braves are in press mode. There's no doubt about it. They are struggling. They're watching the Mets come up and catch them. This Brave team that has won the division for six straight years is just, you know, right now really struggling. They can't score runs. They're getting decent pitching. I mean, obviously, Sale is still tremendous, and the only mistake he made was to really Lindor. But they handled that 10th inning, extra innings, just horrendous. Now, he says he did bunt, and he typically wouldn't bunt, because you don't bunt. Everyone yells about when, you know, our teams don't bunt in the ninth inning or the extra innings. You're lost if you think the road team should bunt. It is a terrible play. With the runners on set, I am not playing for one run as the road team. You play to win the game. That's the old, on the road, you play to win the game. At home, you play for the tie. In extra innings, you do not bunt the runner over. He admits he called that, and then when asked about the squeeze, he said, you'd have to ask them. I didn't call anything. They called a, like, sometimes a guy will lay down a bunt without the manager. He just makes a decision. They're allowed to do that. You know, he has the freedom to lay down a bunt if the third baseman's playing back or whatever the case may be. He wants to sacrifice the guy over because he's struggling, like Verdugo the other night against the Mets, in the first game against the Mets. I hated it. I hated it. But now they got suicide squeezes without the manager? I've never seen that. I've never seen that one before. And honestly, I know we get on Aaron Boone. I get it. And I'm sure a lot in his postgame sound, and I'm sure a lot of people would approve of that and think Aaron Boone should do that. And Aaron Boone should, in the postgame, say, I don't know what the hell that was. That's Snitker pretty much said, you'd have to ask them. I don't have any idea what that was. It's unacceptable. That's what he said. And I'm sure there's clamoring from every Yankee fan who hears that going, that's what Boone needs to say. Boone needs to get into the postgame and say, this is unacceptable. Blah. And he said, we're pissed. But I'm sorry. If I'm the manager, I'm not going out there and admitting my players ran a suicide squeeze without me. I'd rather be wrong than ignorant. I don't want to. I'm sorry. I just be like, yeah, you know, didn't work. I would have never said they did it without me. And then kill the players, see how they take it. I don't know. We'll see if that the Braves are in free fall and their manager calls them out. So we'll see which one works. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls here. And Met fans, it's legit. And, you know, I didn't really focus on McNeil necessarily. But, I mean, what he's been doing since the All-Star break is freaking outrageous. It's funny because we had that conversation, if you guys remember, if you're fans, if you listen often. I know I'm, you know, maybe once or twice a week at the max, I'm on at midnight. I'm usually on at 2. A caller called up and asked me, who would you rather have, Glaber or McNeil? And as a Yankee fan, I said Glaber. And it wasn't like, oh, slam dunk, Glaber, what are you, nuts? I thought about it for 30 seconds, and I said Glaber. I still think he's got some pop. I'll see what happens in the second half. McNeil's been, at least Glaber was a player last year. McNeil was awful last year. But this version of Jeff McNeil, I mean, it's a game changer for this lineup. It is an absolute game changer. What he's doing right now, what he's been since the All-Star break is crazy. And, like, this is the kind of stuff, a Jeff McNeil figuring it out of nowhere in the second half, hitting fly balls for game-winning base hits, that's the kind of stuff that I don't ignore. I heard a caller on with Keith before talking about only 3 hits. They won because of luck. It's embarrassing. It's not. It's fool's gold. I disagree. I think quite the opposite. I think when a team starts playing well and then you start to see lucky things, I mean, that's when you know it's going right. Bad teams get no luck. Good teams get the luck. So when I see a team on a run here, when I see things like Jeff McNeil and all these other things we've talked about, and then I see balls falling in the outfield, it adds to what they're doing. It does not subtract. Jake in New Jersey. What's up, Jake?
Yo, what's going on, man?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Doing great, man. I hope you're doing well on this late night.
Thank you.
I'm hoping to hear my boy Zach. We just went to the game. It was amazing. We're both Yankee fans, but we both watched amazing. They're like, I'm beyond City Field. It's better than Yankee Stadium, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people share your opinion. I don't. You can call me a biased Yankee fan, but I know a lot of people who do, and I like City Field a lot.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Absolutely. But my question, actually, just to what you were talking about. So you think about what Jeff McNeil has been since the All-Star break. He's been amazing. And there was rumors in the first place, even before then, when he was still in his slump, that he could be used as trade bait. Do you think, you know, the Mets forget about what he's been these last 2 weeks and remember what he's been for the last basically year and a half and trade him and use him for at least nothing crazy, obviously, but like maybe a solid, okay bullpen arm? Or, you know, you hold on and hope that maybe this is the batting title Jeff McNeil, man, or at least close to it a little bit, something more than what we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. His contract's reasonable. He's been a bad player for a long time. You got to tell me how much you honestly believe his value is spiked. If I can get something really good, I'd consider it. But even then, I don't know, man. I don't think I want to sell anything. I don't think I want to mess with this team. Right now, you know, Happy Jeff is a thing. Like, Happy Jeff is a thing. I mean, you saw it in the post game. They've been now. Typically, I thank you for the call. Typically, I think there's so much of too many things. Like, you're talking about, they've got, it started with the grimace thing, then Oh My God came out. Now Happy Jeff. Like, there's a lot of things going on with the Mets, and usually I will, you know, okay, how many things can you have? But right now, Happy Jeff is a thing. And I don't know if I want to disturb this, what they've got going on at all. I only want to add to it. And again, I don't think there's any bat I would add. I think I feel comfortable with the lineup. I'm looking to add to the back end of the bullpen, and I think a dynamic front of the rotation starter changes who they are. Now, we'll see if Senga is that. Last year, he was as good as a two. I still don't know if I'd call him an ace, but he was an excellent number two. And with the way Severino is pitching, you have two of them. And with the way they're hitting right now in any given series, they can out-hit whatever lack of an ace they have pitching because the pitching's been serviceable. You've got two number twos solidly if Senga comes back, pitches well. I mean, that's still an if. We got to see him come back, be healthy, and pitch well. But assuming that happens, and you have Severino, who I would not trade and try and do this buy and sell crap, I'm done with that too. They are too good. They are too good. I can't mess with it. So right now, I don't want to mess with any of it. I don't want to trade Happy Jeff and see if it makes angry Mets. I don't want to do that. I get the thought process, but like, it's if they were if they got in a roll here and Jeff got on a roll and they were two games out of the wild card, three games out of the wild card, playing much better, but the Atlanta Braves were hot and playing much better and the other teams were playing and they were, you know, a game back, two games back, but in the mix, I would consider it. That's not where the Mets are. The Mets are not in the mix. The Mets are playing like the best wild card contender of the bunch. Mike in Jersey City. What's up, Mike?
What's going on, Chris?
How you doing, buddy? Good. How are you?
Doing great. I got one key right now for the Mets to win the World Series. You do this, you win.
You do this, you win the World Series. Well, I would say if you believe that, then the Mets should do it because winning the World Series is more important than the proposed future. But
hear me out.
Okay.
Edwin Diaz, McNeil, Alonso, Starling Marte, ship them out. Bring in Mason Miller. We got the World Series. It's over. Have a great night, T-Mac.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Should I even respond to that? So what was it? It was Diaz, McNeil, Alonso. Did he throw someone else? Oh, Marte, right. Because Oakland is looking for Pete Alonso, who's having a down year, and they're going to have to pay $200 million to keep next year. I'm sure that's exactly as they move out of Oakland. I'm sure that's exactly what they're looking to do. Yeah, Jeff McNeil helps them a great deal as well. None of that made any sense at all. And that's, you know, I mean, let's just be honest. If you want to trade prospects for Miller, okay. Now, he broke his left pinky. I saw that report. I got to read the story. He broke his pinky punching a seat or something, Mason Miller. I don't know. Now, that's his opposite. That's his glove hand, not his throwing hand. I don't know if that puts him on the IL. I don't know if they just put it in a stint and put his glove on and not care. Or if he's going to miss some time, I would still trade for him. They probably could afford not to. I don't know if he could still trade for players on the IL. I'm sure. I think he can. But even if he can't, what do they care? They'll hold him off the IL until they trade him, if they're going to trade him at all. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Forget the pieces you gave. That's absurd. I'm talking about, would you trade for Miller? If you're the Mets right now, that's a trade you wouldn't have envisioned. Now, he's got years of control, so it's still sort of planning for the future. That's your closer of the, you just paid your closer 2 years ago a ton of money, but now you're talking about a legitimate, dynamic back end of the bullpen. Right? If Budo's going to be this, and again, it's premature to say it, but hopefully it looks like he's trending in that direction. If you got Budo, Miller, and Diaz at the back end of your bullpen, now you're good after six innings. Especially in a playoff series, you get days off. Hopefully you can get Budo in two games of a five-game series at the bare minimum and have Mason Miller and Diaz. That's the kind of deal I'm talking about. Are you willing to do that kind of deal if you're the Mets? Because it's going to cost you Acuna. Right? It's going to cost you Jet Williams. It's going to cost you your big-time prospects. You want to do that. Are they willing to do that? I'm open to it. I'm more open to it than at any point when I thought it was ridiculous. April, May, even June, that's an absurd comment. Why would you do that? You're not trading your prospects. You're hoarding prospects. That's what you're trying to do. You're building. That's what he's been brought here to do. He's going to take the smarts and cunning of having to run a mid-market team like Milwaukee and add it to Steve Cohen's unlimitless pockets. And that's going to be a solution and a formula for long-term success. And it started at the deadline last year. And to move on from that would have been preposterous a mere few weeks ago. And now it's something I don't think is crazy and something this Mets team has to consider. Alan in Staten Island. What's up, Alan?
How you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. So I'm just wondering, I know you kind of mentioned how
no problem.
What would you do? Say hypothetically you were the GM.
Yes.
Would you go all in for a guy like Tanner Scott or Carlos Estevez from the Angels?
Mm-hmm.
Would you go for someone like Crochet or Schoolball? Would you look for smaller moves? I know the Cubs have a couple guys, Naris and Smiley, where you could just eat the contract and
right. I'm starting to think that I'm the former and that I'm looking to make impact moves. And I like Scooble, for example, like if they were willing, I don't know what it would take to get Scooble. I don't know. A lot of teams are going to be in on it. Teams with, you know, deeper pockets, you know, the prospects at the top of the Mets, they've had down years. They've had some injury issues. But like, that's a piece where if you get Scooble, he's under control for a little bit. You don't have a rotation next year. Really? You were looking to go out and do it in free agency. I mean, Severino's a free agent. Could you bring him back? Sure. But again, free agent, you'd have to pay him. And he's not going to give you the one-year $17 million deal anymore. So, I mean, you have Manaea is going to be a free agent. These are all like one-year deals. You could use a young starting pitcher like that. Like, that's a piece. I think you have to go out and try and get him. Like, you go out and get him. You put him at the top of the rotation in a playoff series with him and Severino and Senga as your top three. And you go out and add a legitimate bullpen guy. What's stopping the Mets from winning? Like, are there holes on this team? Of course. Are they as good as they've been for this last month? Probably not. I think it's somewhere in the middle. They're not nearly as bad as they were. But look, what other teams don't have holes? The Dodgers have been perennial losers in the playoffs. Losers. If they were in New York right now, we'd be killing them. If the Yankees were the Dodgers, we'd be killing the Dodgers just like we kill the Yankees. They lose year after year after year to lesser teams. Who knows what happens in the postseason? The Braves are in a really bad way right now, to the point the Mets are going to overtake them by the end of this four-game set. And Philadelphia blew a 3-1 lead to Arizona last year. I mean, it's not like these are guaranteed, oh, you can't catch these guys because the Mets have some holes. Sure, the Mets have some holes. Right now, their lineup leads Major League Baseball on guys with above-average OPS. Their starting rotation is okay, serviceable, and the bullpen needs some help. Go out there and help them. Like, a bunch of people are getting on me for saying this. Oh, you're a Yankee fan trolling us. Oh, this team has holes. Stop acting like that. Yeah, they do have holes. Go fill them. That's what I'm suggesting. Go fill the holes. We do have breaking news. I'm seeing Ken Rosenthal has it first. I don't know if that's accurate, but Randy Arozarena has been traded to the Mariners, which I think for Yankee fans is probably a good thing. So for multiple reasons. One, Arozarena is no longer a Ray. That's the first positive thing. He absolutely owns the Yankees. I think they're done with the Rays this year already, though. So the season series with the Rays is already over. So it doesn't matter for this season, but moving forward even. But the Mariners are one of the other teams really looking for offense. And I don't think Arozarena was on the table for the New York Yankees. So if you can get the Mariners to, you know, scratch that itch with Arozarena and help that and now give up prospects, I got to see what the whole deal is. I'm just seeing it right now. But Arozarena traded to the Mariners is probably good for Yankee fans and probably good for the Yankees because he wasn't on the table. And the Mariners are just one of several. It's not, doesn't mean the Yankees have nobody else they're competing with, but or that the Mariners are done adding offense. But the Mariners are clearly a team looking to add some offense and adding an outfield piece that I don't think was anywhere near the Yankees' radar can only help them because now I don't know how many moves they have in them, but they've been in other teams associated with, Paredes, other team associated with India, other teams associated with some of the pieces, Rengifo, that the Yankees are in the market for. So to take one off the board and go to Seattle, and when I say it's good, it does help a Mariners team that theoretically they're competing with in the wild card, so it makes the Mariners better. But I would think overall, assuming Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees are going to go out and make moves in that window of it, in that view of it, I think it's a positive because it eliminates maybe a little bit of the urgency from the Mariners to go take one of the guys the Yankees actually are considering going to get. Arozarena would not have been a Yankee target. But in the long run, maybe it hurts the Mariners because I still think the Yankees have a series with the Mariners coming up, so it actually trades Arozarena to playing more against the Yankees, so that hurts. And, of course, it makes although he's having a terrible year for him, it helps the Mariners out as they struggle offensively, and that's a team looking to compete in the wild card. So, but that's big time breaking news. A Rosarena, no longer a Ray, traded to the Mariners. So, and here's the other thing for New York Yankee fans who want to get on Brian Cashman to do it now. I've been saying, hey, the deals aren't out there right now. It's a couple days away. Most of these teams want to wait and make sure that they touch every base and get everybody's final offer, and deadlines create urgency and all that stuff. You know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Deals are being made. Go out there and make a move. Go out there and make a move right now for this huge series, which we'll preview a little bit, in Boston. Go out there and make your Rosarena-type deal. But, I mean, we can go over the different Yankee trading targets, but I would think a Rosarena to the Mariners actually helps the Yankees because the Mariners are clearly in the market for offense. They've struggled really offensively. They have a great starting rotation, and they're looking for offense, and a Rosarena is their first piece. That's a big move. Eric in Rivervale. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Mac. How are we doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Oh, man. You know, your open was great as far as, things can change. Well, as a Yankees fan, I think we know things can certainly change.
That's
and all
right.
The Mets have to do is look across town and know how quickly it can change. So, I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Yanks, and I think the Rosarena move is actually, to your point, doesn't hurt the Yankees, and I certainly won't hate not having him in the division anymore. That'll be great because,
right.
Yeah, he did own us. And I'm just so interested to see what Cash is going to do here. I do think this may open up, you know, the market a little bit. Maybe it starts the floodgates opening a little bit because it has been a little bit quiet. And, with all the holes, it's like, I mean, this series coming up against the Red Sox this weekend is absolutely huge.
Yeah,
and if the Yankees get swept walking into Philly next week, something's got to give, man. Like, to me... Like, there's obviously the trade targets, right? Whether it's Rendifo or Chisholm, as far as, you know, bats and offense. And, you know, I would love to see either of those. I would love to see him go after Mason Miller, even if it takes Spencer Jones. Fine.
Yeah.
Tanner Scott's another one. I think that's a no-brainer.
Yep.
Doesn't seem like it's going to cost much.
I don't know. That's not a Spencer Jones move, to your point. That not for a one-year rental. That's not a Spencer Jones move. Miller could be a Spencer Jones move, yes.
I agree with that. But to me, like, what's so frustrating is that it's just, like, nothing ever changes, right? They go out, they make moves, it never seems to necessarily be the piece or the pieces that we need. So my question is really, like, I mean, let's say, God forbid, the Yankees were to get swept this weekend by the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Which would be an unmitigated disaster.
Yes.
Like, I mean, why wouldn't they cut LeMahieu? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, somebody has to send a message to somebody within this organization.
Yeah.
Like, something's got to give. And I, you know what? Like, I have nothing against LeMahieu, but like, you watch him, it's brutal, dude.
Yeah.
Like, time's it's done. Like, there's no reason they can't cut him. It sends a message.
Yeah. Like, you actually picked up on something I was going to talk about later in the show. You're 100% right. I agree with what you just said. I argued last night about the, there was so much of what George Steinbrenner would do. Even the great Mike Francesa kind of did. I went back. Someone sent me his Yankee rant, and he talked about it, that he would have Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone at the ballpark at 3 a.m. trying to explain themselves, and heads would roll. And I get it, and I think I'm tired of the what would George do question, and it's so stupid. And they went through 17 managers in 16 years. It was a disaster. The team was getting worse. He was trading away all the young pieces. Like, the idea that they should panic and overreact and go crazy and heads should roll the way it did for George Steinbrenner didn't lead to anything meaningful until he was banished. And the team was put together, and then he left Joe Torre alone because they won World Series. Like, the peak of George Steinbrenner didn't help. But having said that, I do agree there has to be a message sent that poor play is unacceptable. I do think we're getting to the point now, and you hit the perfect one. DJ LeMahieu is extremely well thought of inside the organization. DJ LeMahieu, the players in there, Judge, Stanton, Gleyber Torres, they've seen him win batting titles and be the king of runners in scoring position. And every night was a two-hit night. They've seen him be the machine. They've seen this guy get a contract. He makes $15, $16 million a year. He has been a guy they believe in. They're trying to get him hot. Spring training, everybody talked him up that he was finally healthy. If you go out there and just cut DJ LeMahieu and eliminate the rest of his money and just say, hey, he can't help us anymore, and we are only interested in people who can help us, I think that sends more of a message than firing the manager. I think it sends as urgent a message as this team can send. And so I don't know if it even takes, I don't even know if I have to be swept. They're going to go out and get pieces that should that are going to play over DJ LeMahieu anyway. And I thought you were going to ask, like, if they get swept, do you still make trades? Yes, there's nothing that could happen. They could lose every single game between now and then. They're going out and making trades to help the team. They would still be in the playoff picture even if they got swept. So they would still be, maybe they'd be the second or third wild card team, but they would still be in the playoff picture. You are not, they're not abandoning helping this team. There's nothing that could happen. But the question is...
Yeah, I agree with that, C-Mac. Because I almost feel like, to be honest, I prefer the wild card. Like, there's no advantage to winning the division, which we saw clearly last year in the playoffs. Like,
the only advantage... People say that. The only... I know we saw guys get through and once maybe you win the wild card series and you get hot. You have to play another series. Like, you do. I mean, you if you win the division, especially if unless you're the third... And I don't think they would be. I mean, that's if you're the third division winner, if you have the third best record of the division winners, then it doesn't matter, certainly at all. But if you are one of the top two division winners, you don't have to play in the wild card round. I mean, that's not insignificant, but you're right. It's lessened with this new format. I don't know if I'd prefer the wild card, but you're right. The idea of just get in anyway is much more prevalent than even it was before. So I hear what you're saying. I don't think I'd... if you're saying if given the choice, you would take the wild card? No, you would take the division. If you were given the choice, you take the division. But if, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep. Like, the question would be at the end of the season, if it comes, like, the last two games of the year, they're battling for the division, do they mess with their rotation to make sure, like, would they just get the rotation set for the wild card series, or would they try and force Gerrit Cole on short rest to try and win the division? That's, like, the question, and the thought process would probably be no, just have the rotation set for the playoffs, and whatever happens, if you win the division, great, if you don't, you don't. Like, that's where it is. Where previous years, you might have manipulated things to go and try and make sure you win the division last game of the year, last two games of the year. Now, you probably say, whatever, with a wild card, let's set up our rotation. But I'd still rather win the division. And I think that's, I think, and I like DJ LeMahieu, and I feel bad, and he makes a lot of money. I don't feel bad for him necessarily. I honestly think he was poised for a better year. I don't think it's fair to now say he was poised for a big year, like they said, in spring training. But he did hit in spring training, and I honestly think the foot injury, we've seen it. He's not healthy. I don't care what he says. I really don't care what he says. When he had to deal with a foot injury 2 years ago and 3 years ago, it was a disaster, or two years ago and last year. He's a disaster. The foot injury has absolutely crippled him. And I thought this, like, I thought the same thing. When he got hurt with the foot injury, I thought, well, there goes that. Any other injury. He could have broke a finger. He could have pulled a hamstring. He could have, I don't know, any broke a collarbone. I would have felt better about him coming back with that injury as opposed to a foot injury. Because we've seen him try and battle through a foot injury. It zaps him of everything. So for me, that's the guy I would move on from. I would make a statement, and I think he's got enough cachet in that room where they'd be shocked by it. He makes enough money where it would speak to the owner being willing to part with money. And he's been terrible enough where it says, you can't be this bad and continue to be a Yankee. It fits all the criteria of the messages you'd want to send. Cutting DJ LeMahieu more than cutting anybody else, right? You're not going to cut, like, Gleyber Torres hasn't been that bad. He just went back to, but you're not going to cut Gleyber Torres. I mean, there are guys you can cut. Well, you're not going to cut Verdugo necessarily. He had a good start to the year. Like, there's not another guy in there. DJ LeMahieu is the guy. You cut DJ LeMahieu, it sends a message. It says, hey, I don't care you won a batting title a couple years ago. I don't care you made $15 million. You're not playing good enough. You can't be here. It would send shockwaves through the room. And maybe that's what they need.